Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and I'm very, very privileged and delighted to welcome a very accomplished entrepreneur from California, USA, Mr. Tejo Kote. Tejo, welcome to the show.
Ashutosh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Tejo is currently the co-founder and CEO of Airbase. He was the earlier founder of Automattic, which was acquired by SiriusXM for over $110 million. So Tejo, today let's talk about Airbase, which in your words is the leading spend management platform for small and mid-sized companies. Tell me about what you set out to achieve with this platform.
So spend management is an interesting kind of new and emerging category, especially in the small and mid-market segment. What we essentially have set out to do is, when you think about how businesses spend money, especially in the US market, that's what we are primarily focused on. Businesses spend money on lots of stuff, right? And the way they spend that money, it typically happens in many different systems. You have a card system where money is being spent, you're receiving invoices, and that's usually processed and paid out in one system. Employees are spending their own money and claiming reimbursements. That's processed and paid out in a different system. So altogether, you end up with, like, say, half a dozen different systems where everything is happening. That's kind of a death by a thousand cuts. It's very painful for every persona in the business, especially the financial accounting people. And so what we are essentially doing is saying, look, that's really painful, and it would be so much better if everything happened in one single platform, all of the workflows inside of the business and the payments and flow of money. That would solve a whole set of problems. And that's what we try to accomplish, right?
Very interesting. And, you know, given the fact that you have built a very, very successful enterprise for Automattic, after selling, you started from scratch all over again. What have been some of your challenges as you've built Airbase?
You know, the journey with Airbase, thankfully, has been a lot more enjoyable and I won't say challenge-free. There are always challenges, but, my previous company, Automattic, was my first, endeavor as an entrepreneur. And ultimately, it all ended well, but lots of ups and downs. And I was a first-time CEO, a first-time founder, and the real challenges all happened in that journey. But with Airbase, it's been much smoother sailing, thankfully. But the kinds of challenges that we face today are largely associated with very fast growth, which is a good problem to have for sure. And it's things like, we have more than doubled the size of our team. We've added more than about 100 people in the last 6 months in the company. And as you are kind of doing those kinds of things, things break, right? And processes break, systems break. I'm sure you've been through that yourself, and you're always trying to catch up and stay ahead. And these are definitely the good kind of challenges. And fingers crossed, we haven't gotten to that point where, the kind of challenges that I had in my previous company were 2 weeks of payroll in the bank and very close to running out of money letting people go because you wanted to extend runway and the really difficult existential challenges that I had to face in the previous company that I built. Definitely are very far away from that this time around, but I've had to go through all of those kinds of challenges along the way.
Fascinating. So, you were speaking about the challenges that small and mid-sized companies face in managing spend. Mm-hmm. And a lot of small and mid-sized companies could also potentially be startups. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest challenges of startups is systems go haywire completely. Managing cash is a very difficult problem. And you end up getting very highly paid people when you can't afford them. So I'd love to get your perspective on what your understanding was in the US, and are these challenges global?
In a lot of ways, yes, right? Because the earliest days, most small companies, especially, I've always operated in this world of venture funded companies where, growth is a defining characteristic. You want to go after a big market rapidly and you want to kind of raise money and spend it ahead of kind of revenues, that kind of stuff, right? And so, especially if that is the lens through which you are looking at the problem, then in the very early days, you're not really focused on operations. You're focused on finding product market fit. Like, have I actually created something that resonates with the market, which is solving a real problem, which we can scale to large amounts of revenue? That's where the primary focus is. And operations always get a backseat, right? And almost always. And this especially happens with first-time founders who, you know, maybe haven't seen the movie before and can't really see around the corner a little bit. They tend to ignore some of these operational things. And there's a lot of cleanup work that has to get done, lots of money spent and things like that happens downstream. And part of kind of the promise of Airbase is that, if you pick us as early in the journey as possible, you can avoid a lot of that pain. Your future CFO will really love you for that choice that you made. And that's kind of has been my lesson.
Fascinating. And you also mentioned when I was reading about you that a lot of these inefficiencies curtail growth. While logically absolutely correct, I'd love it if you can give us some kind of examples without giving names, of course.
Yeah. So I think the reason why not having some discipline around this, look, ultimately, solving this problem of spend management and how you spend company money, efficiency around that, you know, it is in a lot of ways mandatory, right? In the sense that every business has to spend money. Like, do you know of any business that grows that doesn't have to spend money? It's like, you know, that's partly what makes it an attractive category to build a business in. It's a big market, it's a big opportunity, it's a workflow that every business needs to solve and have efficiency around. And so that's part of what makes it attractive. But the delta of doing it well versus not well is that if you do it well, you're going to have a lot more cash available to you that would have otherwise gone to waste that you can invest back in the business. You can set up the entire company in such a way that there is a lot more discipline in terms of how you're spending money, how you're thinking about budgets and actual spend. Because, you know, it's 2021 right now today, but the vast majority of businesses, the way they operate is through the month, as they're running the business and they're making decisions around spending money, they don't really have the budget versus actuals. What's my budget? And if I make a commitment here and go spend this money, will I end up going over budget? That's impossible. That's because it's this actual spend is happening in so many different systems that you have to wait until the end of the month. You have to wait until the books are closed and the accountants have pulled the information from five different systems. And then you get a report card 2 weeks after the end of the month saying, hey, budget owner, you went over budget last month. And so that's kind of, you know, the process of how it typically works. But if you had a much better process where everything was visible in real time and everybody could make high quality decisions about how you're spending company money, the spend culture in the business changes and the posture of how employees think about spending company changes. And these things can have like a very positive impact on how the company grows over a long period of time, right?
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So tell me, you know, there are accounting packages galore in every part of the world. There are, all kinds of expense management systems available all over the world. How does Airbase differentiate itself from so many other platforms?
Yeah, so one of the ways in which we bring that value to the market is by saying the promise is one platform for all of the non-payroll dollars that are being spent in the business, right? And at a very high level, if you think about the money, what money does a company spend? Salaries, that is payroll, and everything else, right? It is the everything else bucket that we focus on because in a majority of situations, the payroll process is fairly set, straightforward. Tools are, largely good. But it's on the non-payroll side. There's a lot of pain and silos and fragmentation and different tools where money is being spent and workflows are happening. And so our primary value all along, and then kind of the thesis that I've been working towards for 3 or 4 years now is that the market is going to go to a place where the default expectation is going to be, why should we have so many different systems? Everything should happen in one place. From the moment an employee thinks, I want to spend money, how is it requested? How is it approved? How do the vendors get paid? How do the accounting operations happen? And can you bring that consistency across every one of those non-payroll dollars? That's the USP. That's kind of the holy grail that makes the life of finance and accounting teams and a lot of other personas in the business that much easier. And that's the promise that we deliver to the market. And I'm fairly certain 10 years from now, no company or no finance and accounting person will, you know, think about the tech stack that they need to solve this problem of managing company spend and say, yeah, I'm going to go get four different systems to solve this problem. You know, spend management systems consolidated like the way Airbase does it will just be the norm, right?
Amazing, amazing. So one more question relating to Airbase before I move to the next segment. Given today's finance and accounting challenges of audit and, you know, getting everyone to work together, et cetera, how have been your challenges of integrating with so many different platforms around the world?
So primarily, you know, that is a challenge for sure. And so the way we bound that challenge, which is what I encourage any company to do, focus is important, right? So you can't try to boil the ocean and you won't do anything well. So we focus on the US market primarily. Right, and US headquartered business. A lot of our customers have employees around the world, entities around the world, all of that. But we focus on US headquartered companies. And the choice, for example, there are lots of categories of other systems that you have to integrate into. An example of one category, you brought that up earlier, is your accounting software, ERP systems. And so we have picked the top five systems like that, NetSuite, Xero, you know, systems like that, which covers the idea to IPO range of companies that we support. And we've built deep, high quality integrations with those. For example, we don't sell to businesses in India today. And then there are other systems that are popular in India, like Tally and you know, companies like that, which offer solutions in those markets. We've stayed away from that. And because we know that we have to focus on the US market, it's large enough. And we're an early stage enough company that we don't want to stretch ourselves too thin by trying to go after too many opportunities at the same time. But the reality is, it definitely is a massive opportunity. This problem of silos and fragmentation and helping companies manage the money they spend is a global problem, right? But we have picked the US market as the one which gives us the maximum opportunity in the near term, right?
Very interesting. So Tejan, I'm going to move to the next segment. And this is for the many, many people who listen to your words of wisdom for startup entrepreneurs. And you know, you're also an investor and a mentor. Let me first ask you a question that I have often been asked, that should a startup founder go solo or should they be a co-founder?
No, that's a great question. And you know, it's a very contextual kind of decision, right? And my previous company, I had a co-founder, and that made sense for that company. And because we brought complementary skills to the table, right? And there was a certain set of skills that the business needed that he had in the early days, and sort of set of skills that I had, we brought them together, and the business needed that, right? But when I was in the process of starting Airbase, that's one of the questions I asked myself, because having a co-founder is not always kind of a default decision, right? It has to be kind of a first principles led thought process. And with Airbase, for example, as I thought about the nature of the business, you know, we're largely a B2B SaaS and fintech kind of business. And when I thought about what it would take to get the, you know, business to a certain stage and hit the relevant milestones along the way, you know, do I need a co-founder to augment any of the skills that is unnecessary over time? Absolutely. We have a fantastic leadership team now. A lot of them are much smarter than me in their own areas and all of that. But in those early days, to get to initial product market fit, to build the product, take the product to market, do the initial sales to the first set of companies, as I sat down and thought about everything that we needed to do, and then I asked myself, could I just do this myself, or do I really need a co-founder level person to augment gaps? The answer was no. I think I have the skills myself to go ahead and do that. And that's the path I chose to take. Obviously, it's not just about augmentation of skills. It's also, especially if you're a first-time founder, there might be value in having a co-founder just as a thought partner, just as somebody as stress relief and somebody to share the burden with and all of that, right? But having, you know, done this once, even from that angle, it seemed to me like, you know, it's something I can manage, and it's been true, and no regrets, right?
What a fascinating answer. Thank you. So my next question to you is, you know, you've been a startup founder twice, and I'm sure you've invested in many companies and you're mentored even more. What are some of the important qualities, in your opinion, a startup founder needs to have?
You know, then this is something I try to apply to myself first, right? Even before I look at any of the companies I invest in. It starts with, for me, always really picking something to work on that you're genuinely passionate about, curious about. And the question I ask myself before starting any company is, would I work on this even if nobody paid me to do this, right? Mm-hmm. And because the journey, any startup journey, as you know, is tough. And if you want to create something of value, it takes time. And so, you know, working on something that you are passionate about and not having like other short-term goals, like I'm doing this to make money. Yes, you know, if things go well, the money will come and those things are good side effects. But if you are not going to enjoy that journey, it becomes so much harder, right? So the step one for me is the quality of just liking and enjoying the thing that you picked to work on, right? That's one. And then it's also the resilience and persistence, because the journey is long and it takes time to create any meaningful amount of value, right? It takes many years of hard work and ups and downs and iteration and all of that. And to persist through it and to be resilient is important. And that's another quality that I think is important for founders, especially, you know, ones who want to create something of value over the long term, right? So those are the ones that I would say are the most important. But of course, there are many more from an execution perspective and all of that that we could have a much longer conversation.
I agree with you. But that, you know, your response gives me an interesting segue to my next question, which is, what are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup founders make?
This could also be a two-hour conversation of just the mistakes you make, right? And so
I wrote a book on it also, but
so exactly. So we all learn by making those mistakes. But you know, some of the common mistakes that I have made myself, and I see first-time founders, repeatedly do, are things like, first picking a thing that you're not truly passionate about. Like, it's hard, right? And then going back to what I was saying earlier, but if you move into execution, like one of the most common mistakes as a manager, as a leader that I've made is, being afraid to have the difficult conversations. And, you know, how do you make sure that you're setting the right expectations as a leader, as a manager, and as you're scaling the company, right? If specific people are not scaling with it, like, how do you have those difficult conversations? How do you even set it up? You know, the expectations are very clear to the people as the company is scaling on what the company needs at each stage. And these are some of the challenges, especially in venture funded companies where growth tends to happen a lot faster. And the time that people have to grow into roles is not that much. And so you end up in these situations sometimes where the people who really helped you get to a certain stage suddenly are not the right fit to take you to the next stage. And then how do you have that hard conversation with those people who helped you get there that, I'm sorry, but you no longer are the right person to help take us to the next level. And those are all like, you know, complex, difficult things that at least I've screwed up and I've gotten better, you know, at doing some of those things. And as with any endeavor, most endeavors, everything in a startup and business is almost always a people problem, right? It all comes down to people. And most of my biggest mistakes have always been about people. And so I've always, I've spent a lot of time trying to be a student of, human psychology and decision-making and motivation and influence. And these are the things that ultimately I think I would like to think has made me a better founder over time. But I would strongly recommend that founders always be a student of, the human psychology. It'll just make life easier as you build your business, right?
No, Tejo, everything you're saying echoes so much in my mind. I was just thinking, I became an entrepreneur when I was 46. I'm 65 now. And I was just thinking, I wish I'd met you 20 years ago with the same words of wisdom. I probably wouldn't have messed up so much as I did, you know. But thank you. That's an amazing answer.
I am sure I am messing up in a whole new ways. So talk to me in 5 years and I'll tell you about all the ways.
I agree. That's always the startup founder's dilemma, I would say. So I've got time for two more questions. One question on startups, and then I'd like to end with talking about automatic. So my next question is, you mentioned that you believe in working in the VC ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Now, I've spoken to many startup founders, including my own journey, where there's a lot of pressure VCs put on scaling up. My question to you is, at what stage should a startup start to scale up?
Again, the answer is very contextual, but here's how I've always thought about it. I had dreams when I started Airbase of saying I should probably just bootstrap it, right? It would be awesome. Look, I know a lot of founders have this mindset of take money from investors. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least I've always had a very different outlook to it, which is that if I take somebody else's money, okay, that's an obligation now. I have to live up to the promise of giving return on that investment and not just be cavalier about it, right? And so for me, that's why raising money and all these kinds of things, it's not, yes, you celebrate, it's a milestone and that kind of stuff, but in the larger scheme of things, you've signed up for a lot more responsibility. But I did think about, does it make sense to bootstrap? And in some markets, that absolutely makes sense. And you can do that. But in other situations, the choice becomes one between invest aggressively in growth, in acquiring market share, in growing quickly, or cede that to somebody else who will do it, right? And when markets are large, and especially in the technology industry and ecosystem, it can end up being winner take all in a lot of ways, right? And if you want to kind of grow quickly and build market share, you have to kind of raise that capital, give up a piece of your company and invest that ahead of growth, lose money for a number of years. And so that makes sense in certain markets and segments and industries. So you have to ask yourself, can I continue building the business on the back of my own revenues? And it'll just be slower growth, right? You can't get to the same level of revenue growth and ultimate outcome as fast as you might if you can just invest capital a lot faster. So it's really a contextual question. It's also a question of personal choice. Yes, you will absolutely sign up for more pain. There are a whole set of lessons around how do you pick an investor? Like, how do you vet an investor? How do you make sure you reduce the chances of that pain by bringing on high quality partners along the journey? And maybe that's a whole other conversation, but you absolutely, it's a trade-off where if you do decide to take somebody else's money, it is always more painful than not, right? Where you just completely control your own destiny. And so that's how I've approached
well
it.
Said. Well said. And my last question to you now, Tejo, and as I said, I would love to end on a high, which is your journey with Automatic. Tell me about your journey and how you felt selling your first baby.
So, I'm obviously now here in the US and I grew up in India. I came here about 10, 11 years ago in my late 20s. And part of the reason I did that was the startup ecosystem was not as mature as it is now in India. And I wanted to kind of come be in Silicon Valley and I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, all of that, right? And the way I got a chance to come here was as a grad student. And that was also a good idea for me to do because there were clearly gaps in my skills that I wanted to fill. And so I came out here and saw the opportunity to start Automatic way sooner than I expected I would start a company, right? And while I was still in grad school, there was a research group that I was a part of. And I was also filtering every experience through, yes, it's a startup idea. And I was very passionate about ultimately doing something as long as I was committed to working on that for many years. And as it so happened, such an opportunity came up and I started working on that with my co-founder. It was an up and down challenging journey over 6 years, but I would not trade it for anything, right? So it was a fast, I lived my dream basically. Of course, I had a lot more hair when I started my previous company ups were amazing. The lows were terrible, but overall, fantastic learning experience along the way, right? And ultimately, of course, we decided it was the right thing to do for the business for us to sell it, and we sold it to SiriusXM, which is a well-known satellite radio company here, mainly focused on the U.S. market. And it all ended well, right? And there were the ups and the downs and the challenges and near-death experiences and all of that kind of stuff, but ultimately, the outcome was fantastic, life-changing and life-altering in all the right ways. And, there was definitely a period of time there where I could have been in my mid-30s and just having to start over from scratch with nothing, right? And those are the kinds of experiences that, are stressful in the moment, but they also are ultimately what makes you, right? And it gives you perspective, it gives you, an education about what matters in life. And, you know, all's well that ends well, I guess. And things ended in the right place.
Fantastic. Teju, on that note, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for talking to me at such length on Airbase and on startups, and also telling us about your journey with Automatic. Thank you again and good luck.
No, Ashutosh, thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.